Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
This morning, Fox bet Tom Brady's even money to leave. As good a chance he stays as Leaf. Yesterday, a story breaks out. He had a phone call with Bill. It did not go particularly well. So you hear about the bad phone call. The fact that it leaks tells you there's some animosity in that relationship, Belichick, Brady, and the Patriots, and maybe the agent. We know he put his house up for sale. Now all the casinos, Fox Bet, Vegas, everybody's moving toward could go anywhere. So yesterday, you ever notice this in the NBA? When you're trying to get the big fish, right before the trade deadline or the free agency period, you'll see a lot of little moves. They're clearing cap space, signing a friend of a player, and all of a sudden, LeBron's coming to town, or Paul George is coming to town. You clear cap space, you make complimentary moves, maybe you bring a friend of a player. You see that before the big fish is lured in. So what do the Chargers do? This is not a small move. They went out and traded for a Pro Bowl guard yesterday, Trey Turner. A Pro Bowl guard. The weakness of that team is guard. They solved it. And they gave up a left tackle. Why would they do that? Because they tell Tom Brady's agent, no, it's the best tackle draft this decade. We just got a Pro Bowl guard. We'll draft a left tackle with our first pick. Russell Okung now gone to Carolina. We won't draft a quarterback. We go with you, and you can join Hunter Henry, Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, the best receiving back in the NFL, Austin Eckler. We have solved our problem. We got a Pro Bowl guard. We're going to draft a left tackle. This is the move before the move. These are the complementary pieces, the assist before the dunk to get Tom Brady. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get him. But now they can say, Tom, a lot of people are going to make you promises. No, we got it done. New England's going to make you promises. We're not going to make promises. We just went and got the best guard on the market. And we're going to draft a left tackle. You own a house here. There was no other team with the weapons. And I've said this before. Last year was all about injuries. All you need to know about the Chargers. They're a year removed from 12-4. Last year they had major injuries and a quarterback who was mistake prone, who was immobile. And they were still a top 10 offense. So this is a receiver draft. They've already got Keenan Allen. They've got Mike Williams. They're going to go, I'm told, draft another wide receiver. Dean Spanos is not selling this team. I've been assured that. So they've got some issues. They can't sell tickets, and they don't have a quarterback, and they have a bad O-line. They just solved one. And what's the solution to all of this? Selling tickets, getting attractive, being on TV, being interesting. Quarterback situation solved. You just watched it yesterday. Not saying this is going to get Tom Brady to the Chargers, but this is your classic before you get the NBA free agent. You make complimentary moves. You get friends of friends. You clean stuff up, and you go to the star and say, everybody else making promises. We're doing stuff. You own a home here. Best weapons on the market. You stay in the AFC. You can go back and beat Belichick because they're not going to be as good without him, and you know the AFC. So that was a real move yesterday. People in San Diego and Los Angeles, the Spanos family, they should do a bunch of stuff. They're not selling the team. They need a quarterback. This was a preemptive move. Very, very interesting. Fox bet again. Even money. Tom Brady leaving. Phone call was bad yesterday with Tom and Belichick. Let me shift to this. If he signs with somebody tomorrow and I'm off, I'm not going to be happy. Let me shift to this. So last night I watched an NBA game. I wrapped up watching a show called McMillions, which is absolutely fascinating. And I watched Luka Doncic for Dallas, 21 star, and Zion Williamson they played. It was a great game, by the way. It was a great game. Very close. Luka Doncic, if you told me in 20 years, Luka Doncic ends up being the number two scorer in NBA history, I'd be like, yeah, I can see that. I mean, Karl Malone's like number two or three, right? It's like, I can see that. The kid's played over 100 NBA games. He played over 100 games in Europe. He is a totally refined 21-year-old, just turned 21-year-old player. He's terrific. Zion's played 19 NBA games. He's raw as hell. He's 19. It's, you know, a rare back-to-back. They are at different stages of their NBA career. Luka's played European basketball, was the MVP over there as a teenager. He is a much more refined, older, sandpapered player. He is no longer a prospect. He is a great NBA player. He's just going to get better. He's probably 2 to 3 years out of his prime. He's going to be in his prime for 8 years. He's absolutely going to score if he stays healthy over 30,000 points. He is Dirk Nowitzki, but a little better ball handler and a little stronger. Zion's going to be terrific. But it's very interesting as I'm watching these two last night and I'm thinking about this. And Luka was better than Zion last night. Should be. Is that it's very interesting. They have different worlds. Luka goes to his team, hasn't won a playoff series in 8 years. The Dallas Cowboys own the city, suck all the oxygen out of the room. The most famous owner in Mark Cuban. Luka can go drop 28 points a night. No pressure, no microscope. I mean, Dirk Nowitzki is one of the great scorers in NBA history. Not a lot of pressure, not a lot of microscope. Cowboys cross town. Mark Cuban's the owner. There's much bigger brands in the NBA on the coasts. Zion's different. Now, New Orleans is a football town, but Zion's a phenom. Luka's just a great player. Zion's a phenom. Zion's a number one pick. Zion played at Duke. Zion's under the microscope. It's the difference between being D. Wade from Marquette and LeBron James, the chosen one. LeBron comes into the NBA, and I remember his first game. D. Wade is great, goes to Miami, but he's able to kind of organically grow, take his time. We're not watching every single game unless you listen in Miami, and then you wake up one day and D. Wade is great. Hasn't had to live under the constant microscope in his first 7-8 years. LeBron's lived under it and handled it brilliantly, it should be noted, but it's a different world. Not everybody can handle it. Luka is going to end up with 30,000 points. I'm sure he'll get a championship. He'll be in the playoffs. But it'll be a different life than Zion. Zion is going to be picked and poked and prodded. Good God, folks. Every night. Oh, he's too heavy. You know, you can't last like this. And even Alvin Gentry started showing signs of fatigue. We're 19 games in with Zion and the pressure that's mounting.
I think he's fine. We worry about him too freaking much, okay? He's fine. He's 19 years old. He'll be fine.
It's just a different world. We saw this, by the way. Shaq was in Orlando. It's a small town. And Shaq is like, it's too much. I've got to go. Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City. It's just too much. I got to be able to breathe. He goes to Silicon Valley. Now he goes to Brooklyn. We've seen players. Kareem started in Milwaukee. Small town. It's too much. Zion, outside of the Lakers, the Pelicans have had the second most NBA broadcast this year. This is a small market. It's going to be very interesting. Zion's NBA experience, domestic, Duke, shoe explosion, massive deal, massive pressure, massive microscope, is going to be far different than that kid down in Dallas. You know, Mark Cuban's the owner, Dallas Cowboys, didn't watch him play college, didn't international phenom. Again, one's a star and one's an icon. I think Zion can handle it, but I think sometimes the NBA, I hope they realize how lucky they have been, because the icons, and the NBA's had very few icons. It's had a ton of great players. Shaq was an icon. MJ was an icon. Magic was an icon. Bird was an icon. Zion's going to be an icon. Not everybody can handle it. Most young people need a little space, need a little time, don't need the microscope. But it was a pleasure to watch him. They're two of the top three or four young players in the league, but they're going to have different experiences in this league.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Tom Curran's a very legitimate reporter. He covers the New England Patriots, but the league as well. He said yesterday multiple sources told him that Kyle Shanahan is concerned that Jimmy Garoppolo's ceiling is lower than he thought, and he's concerned about his judgment. Yesterday, I got a text from an NFL reporter, not Tom Curran, who said, Shanahan does worry about the judgment of Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm told Lynch likes him. I texted another NFL reporter that says, doesn't work in the Bay but has covered the Niners games twice this year, said, yeah, I mean, it's pretty well known in the league that Kyle pulls his hair out sometimes with Garoppolo. This is one of these things that's right, and it's remarkable how many people argue it. Quarterback's a franchise face. It's not a receiver. A receiver can be a mess. Running back, cornerback, a linebacker, guys can have their issues. You got to get a grown-up to be quarterback. That is why if a quarterback like Baker grabs his junk and is in police video in college, it matters. Jameis Winston, crab legs in college, it matters. Johnny Manziel, money over team in college, it matters. We've seen all their issues amplified in the NFL. Of course it matters. Remember the Jimmy Garoppolo adult film star Beverly Hills dinner? No, it doesn't matter. Hell yeah, it mattered. John Lynch was pissed. Kyle Shanahan was disappointed. Stay out of that lane, bruh. You're the face of the 49ers. It's a $4 billion franchise. But it's not the end of the world. But what happens? But when you do that, and then your number one issue in the NFL is, man, he throws some bad picks. What are bad picks? Judgment. Baker throws a lot. Jameis throws a lot. Russell Wilson's got great judgment. He doesn't throw a lot of picks. Tom Brady's got great judgment. He doesn't throw a lot of picks. There, I'm told, there is concern with Garoppolo, and it's like injuries. You can have an early injury and still get drafted. You can have a second. It does put up a little bit of a red flag. You have a third injury, 27, 28 years old. It is now a pattern. He gets hurt. If Zion has another injury, we got a trend. We got a problem. Not there yet, but he's close. Jimmy Garoppolo, the adult star dinner, Beverly Hills, throws a lot of picks. One more screw up on judgment, you've got a pattern, and it's indisputable. It's what I said. It's the faucet dripping with Baker. Drip, 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 calls out the medical staff. Drip, drip, too many commercials. Police video, grabs junk. After about seven drips, you got a leaky faucet. And here's the other thing. I'm told Lynch likes Garoppolo, but it's different. John Lynch, his legacy's formed. He was a great broadcaster, could always come back to that. He's a borderline Hall of Fame player. Make it into the Hall of Fame. His legacy's been formed. He got to a Super Bowl as a GM. His legacy is much more formed. Kyle Shanahan, dad's a legend. He's blown a couple of Super Bowl fourth quarter leads. His legacy is not formed. He's brilliant. I love Kyle Shanahan. I think he's the smartest young football coach, not Sean McVay, in the National Football League. They're both great. I think Kyle's amazing. But remember, coaches get emotional about players. And I've had GMs tell me this in the NBA. I've had a GM in baseball tell me this, and a GM, more than a handful of GMs in the NFL. Coaches fall in love with players. GMs fall in like with them. You know, GMs look at players as chess pieces. I mean, they got to move him around. I got a salary cap. I mean, again, Jerry loves Dak. Steven's like, well, what's the number? Coaches, Jason Garrett falls in love with Dak. Steven Jones is like, well, I don't like the number. I like him. So you got a situation, I think it's very interesting to watch, where John Lynch, long-term, likes him. His legacy is formed. He feels good about it. He's willing to deal with some of these judgment issues. Kyle Shanahan's like, hey, my legacy's not formed. I've lost two Super Bowls. One as a coordinator, one as a coach, and everybody's blaming me for both of them. And I'm not blaming him for both of them, but a lot of people are. And when you're young, I can speak from experience, and your legacy's not quite formed, you get a little tense. It's a little intense. Dad's a legend. Super Bowl losses. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in San Francisco. I'm told Lynch likes him. And for the record, I'm told Kyle likes him. But you do get a little drip, 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 drip here with Garoppolo and decision-making and the ceiling. How high is it? He missed that wide-open fourth-quarter throw in the Super Bowl. So it's something. It's not everything. But something is something. Let's not deny stuff. All this stuff matters with quarterbacks. It doesn't with wide receivers. You're willing to just deal with some stuff on the margins, on the fringes with other players in other sports. Face of the franchise, everything counts.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
So I just got to give you an update on this. So Tom Brady, here's one story that broke yesterday. Tom Brady and Belichick had a phone conversation. It did not go well. That sounds like it came from Tom Brady's camp. Adam Schefter reports Tom Brady and Belichick had a call recently, and it was business as usual. That sounds like Bill Belichick's the source. Then Tom Brady went on an Instagram chat with Dana White, runs the UFC, and Tom talked about it with his buddy Dana White.
I know it's been a lot of patience for me, and obviously being where I've been for 20 years, it's been an amazing experience, and I don't know what the future holds right now. I'm just trying to be patient through this process, my first time going through it, and in the meantime, I'm going to spend a lot of time with my family over the next 10, 12 days, and we got a little vacation plan, which I'm looking forward to.
March 16th, Brady can talk to teams legally. It's legal tampering time. March 18th, he'd have to sign by New England because New England wants to sign Tom. And if they do, that's when they get the financial cap break. You know what this feels like to me? Belichick would love to have Tom back, but he'd live if he's not. He's not that emotionally vested. It feels like Tom wants to go back, but he's very, very emotionally vested. And it's frustrating for Tom because Bill's not going to put his arms around him and Bill's ready to move on. Bill's got his Super Bowls. He's ready to find the next Brady. He's ready to move. He was ready to move 3 years ago. And he's just, they talk on the phone and business as usual. Bill's grumpy and doesn't really care. And during the combine, Bill didn't go. He was working out some eight-string fullback from somewhere. Belichick's ready to move on, and Brady's not, and that's painful. But when I moved to Vegas out of college, I started playing a game. I started playing a psychological game. So I moved to Vegas. I'm 19, 20, 21 years old, and they have casinos, and I start betting sports. And after the first couple of weekends, if my team lost and I bet my team, it was a miserable weekend. And I thought, I need some sort of mechanism to protect me emotionally. I don't want to ruin my weekend because I wasn't making money. You know, didn't have a girlfriend. It's not much of a life. So I started betting against the teams I liked. And that way, if my team lost, I still made money. And if my team won, I didn't care that I lost money. I bought emotional protection, emotional insurance. So I didn't have terrible weekends. Well, your weekends weren't always great. I didn't bet enough that it really mattered, but it was nice to win $50 if my team's lost. I think Brady actually has to have this same mindset. Sign with New England and just bake it in. We're not going to get a tight end. We're not going to pay for a big receiver. Bill's never going to give me a big hug. And we're going to draft a quarterback in round one to replace me. And if you go into the season with that, if you don't, you're going to be miserable. You're going to go 11-5 and be miserable. If you do, expectations. I think happiness has a direct connection to expectations. If Tom, who really, really wants to get two more years, and Belichick, he comes back, great. If not, we're fine. And I really think that's how Bill sees this now. It's 20 years, it's played out, legacy's formed. Time to move on to the next guy. Five guys in the first round here. I like three or four of them. I think Tom has to manage it. Understand, they're going to draft a quarterback to replace you with their first pick. They don't have a second pick. They're not going to spend a bunch of money on a free agent receiver. They don't. They're probably, there's no great tight ends in this draft, perhaps. You're not going to get it, and you'll probably win your division. If that's your expectations, you're happy. But if Tom's going to New England thinking Bill's going to put his arm around him, Bill cares about this as much as he does. They're going to spend money on a free agent receiver. They're not going to draft a quarterback. They're going to draft a receiver to help him at the end of round one. They did that last year. Didn't do anything. Got to manage expectations. March 16th, legal tampering begins. March 18th, Brady would have to sign, thread the needle to give the cap break to the Patriots, who are always looking for a cap break.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Greg Cosell, 40 years NFL Films, was at the Combine last week, which, you know, it's a lot of fun. I want to start, Greg, with a player that I think is a phenomenal talent. We talk about Zion Williamson all the time in the NBA, where he's a flawed player, but he has such a unique body type. Draft him, figure it out later. That's what coaches do. I look at Isaiah Simmons at Clemson, 4'3", 9. No other athlete like him. Nobody knows where he plays. Well, Clemson figured it out. That's an NFL coaching staff's job. What do you do with Isaiah Simmons, who's the best positionless player maybe in the last couple drafts?
Well, you got to decide what he is in your base defense, and then you decide how you want to use him in your sub-defense. And the league has moved toward those kinds of players in sub-defenses. He's obviously not the same body type as Tyrann Mathieu, who's a that kind of player for the Chiefs. Derwin James has been that kind of player in his 2 years in the league with the Chargers. You know, Simmons is 6'3 and 5'8", weighs 238 pounds. But when you watch him play, he plays much more like a safety than a linebacker.
He does, yes.
He's not really a physical player. He's at his best as a space and movement player. You want him away from the bodies. You do not want to align him where the bodies are. But because of his size, my guess is more people will see him as a linebacker in a base than a safety, although I ultimately think he's really more suited traits-wise and skill set-wise to be a safety in a base. But then in sub, he'll play multiple positions.
I want to go, it's a great receiver draft. There are a couple of running backs I like, having been in this business forever. Is there a running back in your opinion? Because we've seen a little bit of a renaissance with some of these running backs. Is there a running back in this first round you like?
Well, I got to tell you, and I may be in the minority, and I'm waiting for someone that I respect to tell me I'm crazy, but I think Jonathan Taylor is a big, big-time runner. I actually finished watching him not too long ago, and I just kept watching and watching and watching. I probably watched way more, Colin, than I needed to, but I enjoyed it. And I think he's a really, really good back. I was actually talking with a friend of mine, and I said, let me ask you a question. I said, what is the significant difference between Ezekiel Elliott and Jonathan Taylor? And we really couldn't figure that out in great detail. But I know Jonathan Taylor is not going to be the fourth pick in the draft.
Right.
But and now you get into that conversation, which we've had now for numerous years, about the value of a running back, because someone will look at the 49ers and say, well, they had a great, great running game, and they did not have that one back that you'd call a dynamic feature back. So that's a separate question. But I think Jonathan Taylor as a runner is the best back in this draft.
Is there a receiver? We know Judy at Alabama is amazing, and everybody loves Lamb at Oklahoma. Is there somebody else in that class? Because many suspect three receivers will go, or four.
Well, then I guess it depends on what you're looking for. I really like Henry Ruggs a lot.
Yeah.
And I think he's a much, much better route runner than people think. And that's why you really have to study the tape hard, because Ruggs is to me, somewhat of a complete receiver with dynamic speed. And I know the argument is there's been no great receivers who run a 4.29. Well, you know, athletes are getting better and better and better. There was nobody really like Zion Williamson before Zion Williamson. So, you know, athletes get better. He did not work out at the combine, but I really like T. Higgins, and a player that I liked well before the combine, but clearly helped himself just with his explosive traits, was Denzel Mims. And of course, I love when you see Twitter as soon as these guys run. Well, I had him in the fourth round, and now he's going in the first round. I love that. But Denzel Mims to me is very, very good on tape.
Yeah, we just saw Justin Jefferson at LSU, a tall, lanky guy who can run as well.
Yeah, but just a quick point on that. When you watch his tape, I don't care what his 40 time is, and this is why 40 times are interesting. He's not a vertical receiver. You know, what he did is he trained for the combine and he ran fast. But if you watch his tape, he's not a vertical receiver by any stretch of the imagination. So just because he ran a 4.43 does not mean he's now a vertical receiver.
I want to go back to the NFL, then we'll circle back to your videos this week and talk about, again, some college kids. So when people talk about, one of the reasons I don't buy Brady to San Francisco is because I think if you look at what Kyle Shanahan does with his offense, he moves his quarterback a lot. And that's not who Brady or a Phillip Rivers or an Eli Manning is. Is there an offense beyond New England that you could see Brady in, and stylistically it would make a little sense to you?
Well, you know, I got the sense being at the combine that the Tennessee Titans were far more interested in retaining Derrick Henry than they were Ryan Tannehill. And I think that would be an offense that would fit with its focus on the run game and the play-action pass game, where Brady would not have to throw the ball by choice 35, 40 times a game. It's a very good team with a solid defense. I don't know what will happen with Jack Conklin, their right tackle. It appears they'll lose him. But for the most part, they've got a solid offensive line. They've got a clear and defined offensive approach that does not necessarily start with the quarterback. So that could be an option.
Mm-hmm. As far as Teddy Bridgewater, Tampa Bay rumors, is there a style or personnel that works for Bridgewater, who I tend to like more than everybody else?
Yeah, that would surprise me. But again, you know, when you're looking for a quarterback, you know, it's the old joke, when you don't have a girlfriend, they all are tens. You know, Teddy Bridgewater does not by nature fit a Bruce Arians approach, because Arians is a downfield guy, and Bridgewater is absolutely not. Now, he certainly can throw it downfield off play action, but his general quarterbacking traits are not driving the ball down the field. So, again, if they're going to lose Jameis and you need a quarterback, then, hey, Teddy Bridgewater looks good to you, but he does not really fit what we've known of Bruce Arians through these years.
All right, that's great. Now, let's go back to college. I like Tua. You don't like Tua as much, right?
No, I mean, I don't think he's overly gifted. You know, I had some interesting conversations at the Combine with some offensive coordinators, and I was very surprised by this. A couple of them told me that they thought he was a backup quarterback in the
Ooh.
NFL.
Ooh.
So we're not going to be naming names on that, Colin. But yeah, I don't think he's highly gifted. Again, that does not mean he can't play well in the NFL, but I think at his core he's a system player. Most are. But I think he needs a system where the ball comes out quick, where it's a rhythm-based offense, you know, quick game type stuff, three-step, five-step, let him be very timing-based. I think that's his game. I don't think he'll be a great athlete at the NFL level,
no.
So I think he's going to have to be really efficient and effective from the pocket.
Now, you like Burrow more than a lot of people. You think he's head and shoulders above everybody?
I think he's the best quarterback prospect in this draft. And from what I was told from the interview process, he was basically a computer chip when people were talking to him. So, yeah, I think Burrow is the best quarterback prospect in this draft.
Yeah. Bucky Brooks and I see a little bit of Tony Romo. You know, even he wears number 9. Now, by the way, just because somebody's the best quarterback prospect in this draft, do you consider him a great prospect? A great prospect?
A great prospect? You mean along? I'm trying to think.
Trevor Lawrence, Andrew Luck.
Well, I don't think he's Andrew Luck. Trevor Lawrence has played 2 years in college. I'm not quite ready to put him at any level. So he's got to play another year in college, and then we'll discuss him.
Yeah.
But I don't think he's Andrew Luck by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay.
But I think he's a very good prospect and the best one in this draft class.
Okay. Now I want to talk about Jordan Love, because, you know, this is the kid where the mobility of the quarterback position is changing. It seems to be more available. It's what people are looking for. He was very good when he had a coach as a sophomore. His numbers were great. And then he had a coaching change from a recently fired coach at Oregon State. He went to be his coach, and he didn't play as well. So sometimes I look at coaches when a quarterback erodes. Who's the coach? What's the staff? So I look at his sophomore tape, and I'm blown away. His junior stuff on YouTube, not so much. What do you make of him?
Yeah, I like his traits quite a bit. I think he needs some work in some specific areas. I know the coach he's working with. I spoke with him at the Combine. He needs work with a firm base and better balance as he delivers the ball. But I think he's got what I would call ball distributor traits, in that he can hit that back foot. The ball can come out. He can be that kind of quarterback. You know, I think that interceptions, you have to look at each and every one, and there's reasons for each and every one. I would say one thing that did stand out, and you hope you can fix this, is there were times he did not locate and process underneath defenders on intermediate throws. That was a defining issue on some of his interceptions. That needs to be worked out, because in the NFL that just gets worse. But overall, there's a lot to like about Jordan Love, and I think that to me he'll be one of those guys that could be drafted higher than people think or lower than people think, but I think that I like him a lot. You know, I hope he goes to a team where it's an offensive-based coaching staff and they really get a chance to work with him.
All right, your play of the week is Jordan Love, I'm told.
Yeah, and I picked this play because I think it speaks to what you'll get in the NFL. So let's just run the play to start. It was a really, really good throw by Jordan Love.
Okay.
A deep throw, sideline throw. You can see he drops it right in the bucket. But I think what I really liked about this play, number one, he's in an empty set. No one's in the backfield with him. And you're going to get this in the NFL. You have three receivers to the wide side of the field, two receivers to the boundary side of the field. Now, what the defense is showing him initially is a split safety look, a two-shell look. But that's not what happens at the snap. The safety start to rotate. Love looks to his left, but there's a safety now rotating over the top of those two outside wide receivers. So that gets taken away. There's no throw there. But he sees that other safety, the boundary safety, rotating to the middle of the field. So he now knows he has one-on-one to the boundary with no safety help over the top. So this is the kind of thing, Colin, you'll see in the NFL. And he makes a beautiful throw. He eliminated what was not there within the timing of the play, and he isolated what was there within the timing of the play. And I thought this was a good example of the kind of thing that you get in the NFL where the coverage changes after the snap of the ball.
I love Greg breaking down Utah State. Night film. This is what you do, my friend. It looks like a poorly lit field in some of those.
I'm just grinding away watching the tape. There's way too many. When you're a one-man GM staff, Colin, there's a lot of guys to watch.
Good talking to you, Greg, as always.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Tomorrow, Giannis goes and plays the Lakers. I'd take LeBron as MVP, Giannis second, but that's not going to happen. Giannis is going to win. Unless Giannis, you know, just sits out the last 12 games of the year, which even then I think he'd win. But it is interesting when I hear people say, I watched the 60 Minutes piece about 3 years ago on Giannis. Maybe it had been 2 years ago on 60 Minutes. He's the next LeBron. It's like he's never going to be LeBron. Forget the game. International players don't think like American players. And I was telling people this morning, is LeBron grows up in America. He's aggressive politically about American politics. He's aggressive in terms of recruiting players. He's aggressive in terms of mobility. He's aggressive in terms of business. He is willing to play the victim. A lot of times with international players, they don't feel that way. Rick Bucher was on our show the other day talking about, you know, Akeem played with Houston for 17 years and Dirk played with the Mavs for 20 years. And Giannis has said, I don't want to leave. They don't sometimes come to America and think it's mine and I'm going to be aggressive and I'm going to talk about politics and I'm going to be... It's very possible they don't, the players from other countries that come to America don't see the world like that. And Bucher talked about that.
Name a single international player who has expressed dissatisfaction with where he is and has forced his way to another team. A great player. I mean, you look at Dirk, you look at Pau Gasol, you look at Tim Duncan, Manu, Tony, go down the line of all the great international players who have been made cornerstones on NBA teams. They're grateful that an NBA team thinks that highly of them that they would build their team around them. The idea that they need to go to play in LA or New York or Houston simply is not in their mindset the way it is with American players.
Listen, LeBron was willing to be a villain. He's willing to shout out our president. He's willing to be hyper-mobile and hyper-aggressive. I'm not so sure Giannis sees the world that way. And, so when I hear the next LeBron is so much more than just a basketball player. He has been the face of the league for 15 years. He's a better player than Giannis, but it's more than that. LeBron, to be iconic, he's been willing to really go into the face of some things. I mean, it used to be in this league that if you left your team, you were a bad guy. Now, because of LeBron, if you don't at least consider leaving, you're a crazy guy. Like Paul George is going to stay with Westbrook. Kawhi is going to stay in Canada. Kevin Durant's going to stay in Oklahoma City. LeBron's going to stay in Cleveland. You're criticized if you don't consider. If Giannis loses in the Eastern Conference Finals and Chris Middleton struggles, aren't we all going to go, what are you doing, dude? Bruh, come on. Go play with better players. Go to Golden State. Play with Steph and Clay and Draymond. That's the world LeBron's created, the new world in the NBA. I don't see Giannis as a guy that would do that.